living with no technology, no phone, no car, no TV, no electricity, no lights, no computer, no cell phone. Think you could do that? Eric Brendy and his wife Mary did it for a little over a year. Living, well, I guess no technology be the way to do it. As it says on the cover of his book, Better Off, 2 people, 1 year, 0 watts. He's here in the studio to talk about it, ironically using the technology of the 50,000-watt blowtorch that is KMOX to help talk up his book a little bit. Although the book, as he told me just a moment ago, doesn't need all that much help. He's already sold out the first printing of the book. So congratulations and welcome to KMOX.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you here. Why did you go off to a place where you weren't going to have any technology? You're a guy who was at MIT. That's the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Eric.
Well, I have to admit that when I entered MIT, I entered with an ulterior motive. I was already a little bit suspicious of what technology was doing to us. And so I was trying to infiltrate the bastion of technology in order to do my part to overthrow it.
Overthrowing technology. Now, are you in your efforts in writing the book and in your overall kind of life thesis, are you trying to battle back against the technology of the 21st century?
Well, I am trying to at least live what I consider to be a balanced life, given all of the technology around me and the choices I have. Mm-hmm. I look critically at the choices and make decisions that I think are best for me and my family.
Now, we can't say where you went to do this year plus, because the community where you went has requested anonymity, and we'll certainly grant them that here today, as you have in your book. But can you give us an idea of what kind of community it was? What goes on there?
Well, if you know anything about the Amish or the Old Order Mennonites, it's very closely related to both of those, but not quite the same. The main difference was that they're actually a lot stricter technologically than either. Most Old Order Amish and Old Order Mennonite communities draw the line at electricity. They don't use electricity, but they allow all kinds of motors, gasoline-powered motors like chainsaws, motorized pumps, motorized farming equipment that's stationary. But this group did everything either by hand or by horsepower.
Mm-hmm. In fact, when you got there, within minutes, you were told it's your turn to mow the lawn, and here comes the old push mower, right?
Right, and which we still have to this day, although we actually bought a different kind, but it's still a push mower.
Now, don't machines make things easier?
Well, they...
Motorized machines I'm talking about, because the push mower is technically a machine. I'm talking about
yes.
An electric or gas-powered or anything else technologically more advanced than the push mower. Doesn't that make life easier?
Well, they can, but the catch is this. If we need physical exercise anyway to be healthy, why not leave the exercise in our practical daily tasks until it kill two birds with one stone? I mean, when I go out and do the push mower, I'm getting a little workout in along with mowing the grass.
Mm-hmm.
If I walk to the grocery store, I'm getting a little exercise while I'm performing my errand.
Mm-hmm.
But if I drive a car, I'm going to have to make up for that later. So I'm actually creating two jobs out of one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, there's probably a point where some kinds of physical exertion are just too taxing and there's no point in bothering with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think somewhere in the middle is a balancing point.
Okay. And that's what you tried to reach there. Now, you say that you went to MIT to kind of infiltrate the enemy. You didn't say that. I'm putting words in your mouth here, but I think that's essentially the idea here. When you went off to live in this community, what was the hardest thing for you to give up?
Well, I'd have to say that it was probably the refrigerator,
mm-hmm.
surprisingly. There's a whole chapter about a spat that my wife and I had over the refrigerator. And I will say I was a little oblivious to her agony in having to cook from scratch 3 meals a day because we couldn't keep leftovers fresh in the hot parts of the summer. And she started to rebel a little bit. And so today we do have a refrigerator. It's a half-size refrigerator, holds about half as much as an ordinary refrigerator, but that's plenty for us.
Mm-hmm. And you're still trying to live as much of this lifestyle as you can, but it was Mary, your wife, that revolted in that...
in that one incident.
There was nothing else you missed?
I would say that tops the list. There is a few other things that we would change. Actually, in some ways, we would have gone with even less technology than the people in the community.
Now, what did you have that you thought was superfluous? I want to know, in a world where there is low tech at best, where you said, this is too much, we don't need this.
Well, it wasn't so much what we have, but it was what the level that people had in the community. And it was the horses. A lot of people in this community had 5, 8, 10, 12 horses. And by the end of my stay there, I did a little analysis and realized that a lot of the work they were doing and a lot of the horse-powered machinery they were using was merely to feed their horses, to take care of their horses. So it was kind of like a circle. They were doing, growing crops to feed their horses, and they need their horses to grow the crops and back and forth. And when you discussed it with some of the people there, they would tell you, yeah, sure, I could get rid of, 5 of my horses, but then there wouldn't be enough work for all my children to do.
When you went there, you had very little money. I think it said in the book about $1,500 when you showed up in this community, and yet you lived for more than a year. How do you manage to stretch $1,500 that far, considering that you even had to pay rent?
Yeah, we had to pay $150 rent for 18 months. And, well, that was why I was anxiety-stricken when we first arrived, because I knew it was sink or swim. I'd have to pull my own weight. And I did some studying up before I got there. I got some gardening books, some horticulture books, and I decided to grow a crop of pumpkins. That was going to be my cash crop. And also, it turned out we did another cash crop of sorghum, which in those parts of the country is used to make sorghum molasses.
Okay.
So between those two, we earned our keep.
And you sold it to other people in the community or other people outside the community?
Well, we sold it to people in the area who were not members of the community.
So there was exposure to the outside world.
Yeah. But it was a relatively remote location. It was pretty far from the nearest interstate, so people had to kind of come out of their way to get there.
And they came to you just to do commerce? There was...
Well, I mean, there was an existing network of people who were not Mennonite, as I call them, who had lived there long before the Mennonites arrived. The Mennonites had only been there for about 15 years when we got there. They had relocated from all parts of the country. And the people who were there were farmers also, but they were electrified and mechanized and so forth. And those people did often buy vegetables and goods from the Amish. People drove up from the major cities in the area. There was one about an hour away just to buy stuff from them. And they bought stuff from us, too, because we looked, to all practical purpose, like Mennonites ourselves.
Oh, did you dress in the same way Amish or a Mennonite person would?
Not exactly the same, but we, I usually wore a straw hat, and my wife usually had a dress on when she was facing the public. So to outsiders, we sort of half-passed.
In this community, were there families?
Oh, you mean the people, the farmers? Yeah. Well, yeah. Everybody had big families.
The people in the Mennonite community, they had big families.
Big families.
The children would be exposed to people from outside the community and would no doubt hear about cool stuff going on elsewhere. Were they ever tempted by that sort of thing?
In fact, the one technology that we held on to for quite a while we lived there was our car. We had a Ford Escort.
That's cheating.
The reason we held on to it was that we wanted to get a little bit established and settled in before we bought a horse and buggy. And so we held on to the car for a while. And the neighbor boy, who was one of a vast number of children in this family, came by a lot to show us when to pick our green beans and so forth. And when he came by to show us where the spring was, he actually asked us if we could take him in the car. And he'd done so many favors.
You're the devil, and you're tempting this young boy.
Well, and it turned out to be a disaster. And there's a whole chapter about this because we had to go through a field that I didn't know had a bull in it, and I was driving a red car, and I just don't even want to think about what happened.
But the kid probably loved it, didn't he?
Oh, the kid was having a splendid time. It was like being in a flying saucer.
And did this tempt him to want to leave the community? Were there kids in the community who, as teenagers, would hear about things like this and hear about what kids outside the community were enjoying and say, ooh, I want some of that?
In this particular community, not really. But a lot of Amish communities, there's a lot of attrition because kids think the grass is greener or the technology is greener on the other side of the hill. Here, they had such a cohesive, tight-knit group, and they were so dedicated that, you know, I think the kids saw that it was a novelty, it was fun, but that was all.
Mm-hmm. So there wasn't anything like the Amish have, like Rumspringer, where at 16 years old they actually can go out into the world for a year and experience it and decide whether they want to come back to their tightly knit religious community or be a part of the rest of the world.
That's a good question, yeah. This particular group did not favor Rumspringer.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of them had migrated from communities that did practice Rumspringer, and they felt that the Rumspringer was way out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard about it, but there was a TV show last summer called Amish in the City.
Yes, I don't know how you heard about it.
Well, my publicist told me to watch it. I had a hard time. None of my friends have TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had to end up going to a sushi bar in the Central West End and begging the sushi chef to let me watch this show while he was doing sushi.
Yes. Hi, I know you're Japanese. I'd like to watch a TV show about the Amish, please, on American television. Oh, no problem. This is the United States of America. We welcome all entertainment of all perverted kinds. And so you watched it, and what did you think?
Well, I actually thought that it made the Amish look pretty good to the the modern American kids that they had on the show.
When I first heard of that show, I thought, if this makes fun of the Amish, then it's going to be completely offensive and deserves no place on network television. But in fact, it made fun of the kids who weren't Amish.
Yeah.
And made them look bad. So it was kind of entertaining in that way, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the studio today with Eric Brendy, who's living here in St. Louis, but at one point a few years ago lived in an undisclosed location. Nowhere near Dick Cheney's place, though, right?
No.
As far as we know.
Not as far as I know.
Who would know? It's an undisclosed location. But in the location that Eric and his wife Mary lived in, there was no technology, no electricity, no cell phones, no phones of any kind, no television, no radio. What the heck did you guys do for entertainment?
Oh, well, you know, there's a chapter about what we did in the evening after the day's work was done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most wonderful things in this way of life was just simply resting after you did a hard day's work.
Well, sure.
And just the feeling of you know, not working after you've done the work is a great feeling in itself.
Mm-hmm.
What we loved to do while we were sitting at home was read.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd both have our books and sit next to each other and hear the crickets chirping outside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was when we were just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
The people around us, of course, were often dropping in, and visiting was very frequent. That was another form of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could also say that when people got together for work, which was pretty much on a daily basis, that doubled as a form of recreation.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to draw the line between work and recreation because it was often a form of festivity. And when they had a barn raising, it was actually something that people looked forward to as a way to have fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, farming in America, incredibly tough job, incredibly hard lifestyle, incredibly tough economy. How did you find the money to work out for you in this year or year and a half that you were on this farm living with what you call the Minimites?
Well, if we had farmed as a way to make a profit as a business, it would have been silly for us to do it the way we were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you farm it just simply in order to meet your own needs, we had more than enough, and that was our goal. And that was the goal of the people in the community. They were debt-free as a group.
Mm-hmm.
You compare that to the farmers around them, I mean, who are going bankrupt right and left. These people, they didn't need all the technology. They didn't need the large, huge tractors and the big farms that go with it. So their overhead was minimal. I mean, they're living without debt, so they didn't have to worry about that.
But they weren't setting themselves up for the future in any way. There were no savings necessarily.
Actually, if you talk to a local banker, you would have found that the people in that community were by far the richest people, had the biggest bank accounts in the whole county.
Because they didn't have debt.
They didn't have debt. They didn't spend money except when necessary to buy a farm or something.
Did the kids in the community go to school?
They had their own private school. They went up to the eighth grade.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened after eighth grade? They had to start working on the farm?
Yeah, well, they actually looked forward to it. I mean, if you talk to the kids, they just were chafing at the bit to get out there and start making their own.
Mm-hmm. But after 14 years old, there was no high school, no college for these kids for the most part?
Not for them. Now, I will say that This group, even though it was strict technologically, was very open to outsiders, which is kind of an unusual combination. And there were outsiders who had come in who were fairly well educated. There was one gentleman that I got to know there who actually went to a very well-known Eastern school who had made the conversion to the group.
You yourself went to MIT, and so...
Yeah, but I didn't join. This guy actually joined the group.
He actually joined up. So your time there didn't convince you that you wanted to live that lifestyle full-time on a permanent basis?
Well...
It was an experiment for you.
Right. Well, it was... Actually, we were open to the possibility of staying in the area. We pretty much discarded the idea of joining the group because there were certain religious tenets that they held that I thought were a little bit unreasonable. But we were completely open to staying in the group. We had a wonderful relationship with our neighbors, staying in the area but not joining the group.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give away the plot of the book. There are some unexpected twists that happen that in the end convinced us to try to apply the lessons we learned in modern society.
And you're still trying to live, if not fully, that life, as much of that life as you can?
Yeah. Well, we are, as I said, we're seeking a balance, a healthy balance here in the city. And it, from the point of view of most people, it probably seems as though we're very minimal. But compared to the way we lived on the farm, we have quite a few more things than we did when we were in the community.
But it's obvious that you're not completely anti-technology. Here you are on a giant radio station talking about your book. When you need food, I'm sure you go to a supermarket where items are refrigerated and the doors probably open up using electricity and that sort of stuff. So you haven't closed yourself off from that world completely.
No, not at all. In fact, I've never tried to argue that technology is in itself bad. It all has to do with how much and what kind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the 93 flood came here to St. Louis, nobody, even though we were all up to our eyeballs in water, nobody said that water is bad. Mm-hmm. It was just too much of it. We were up to our eyeballs in it.
Right.
And I think we're having the same problem with technology. We're getting saturated.
Did you find when Mary became pregnant, Mary is his wife, you married her 10 days before you started this adventure.
Yeah.
Along the way, she became pregnant, which answers my earlier question about what did you do for entertainment. did you find that not having access to modern medicine and the technologies that go with that became a problem for you?
Well, I will say on our list of things we might have modified at the end of the stay, and this comes out in the paperback, I wasn't as explicit in the hardcover. We probably would have made sure that there was access to a telephone because we did have some worrisome moments during the delivery of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Mennonite midwife who was very good, but Mary had a very long labor, and we were very worried at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to actually go over and use the neighbor's telephone, who were not Mennonites.
Mm-hmm. And you contacted an OBGYN or a pediatrician?
The doctor who operated out of the nearest town was very sympathetic to the group, and he backed up all the midwives and their deliveries. So we had already undergone an examination with him before we did the delivery.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't completely say, you know, we're going to shut out the outside world while we're here, because that was practically impossible.
No, even the Mennonites all went to the same doctor to have a prenatal exam to make sure that they were suitable for midwife birth, and some of them were not. Some of them had to do it in a hospital.
In the studio today with Eric Brendy, who lives here in St. Louis, but a few years ago lived, I guess off the grid would be a way to put it. He has written about that experience in a book called Better Off, Flipping the Switch on Technology. We're going to flip the switch on our phones here. During that entire experience, the only time you used the phone was when you had to go nearby to call for some medical help. But we'll use our phones here now for some questions. 314-436-7900 and toll-free 800-925-1120. Lee, you're on the Paul Harris Show. Say hi to Eric.
How you doing, Eric?
Fine. How are you?
I was just curious. It's kind of funny you were talking about, you know, technology. I'm a computer technician, and, you know, I see internet problems, wireless network problems, everything. And I kind of agree with what you're saying, but I was kind of curious in the community, what about crime? Is it just like non-existent, or does it exist whatsoever? And if so, is an outside source called, like state police, or do they handle it within the community itself?
Well, that's a good question.
Well, this particular community did have some theft because people were gone all Sunday, and everyone in the area around knew it. And oftentimes these people had a lot of cash around from Saturday sales. Mm-hmm. So they did have problems with that. And here's an area where I had trouble following their logic. They would report it to the police, but they themselves thought that being a police officer was not something a Christian could do.
Hmm. I see.
I think they tried to have it both ways. That was one of the areas where I wasn't really fully in their way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. I think you went more for the low technology angle than for the religious angle. Am I right there?
Right. Although I liked a lot of their religious ideas, and I think they had a beautiful religion, but some of the ideas I thought were a little bit off.
All right. We go to Ed. You're on KMOX. Hello.
Oh, hello. I'm nice to hear your guests speak on the a simpler life. I tasted a little bit of that myself in my earlier years, and I can just really relate to what he's talking about.
Could you imagine doing it that way now, Ed?
Well, yeah, I've been there. You know, I've been around the Mennonites, the Amish, and I've been with alternative communities, and I can't imagine it. It's a very sane way of living compared to a lot of how we live in our modern day world. It's very, very. It's got a lot of rewarding points to it.
All right, Ed. Thanks for calling. Of course, they can't listen to the Paul Harris show, so how rewarding could it possibly be? I'm kidding. Now, you're doing a book tour now to promote the paperback edition of Better Off. How did we book you? I think we talked to somebody, but how did they contact you? You don't have a phone.
Oh, I have a phone in St. Louis.
Oh, you do?
There are some forms of modern technology we have. We don't have a television. We don't have a computer.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a telephone.
No email, obviously.
I don't have a computer at home, but as I point out on the jacket of the book, I have an email account at the library.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only because my publisher insists on it.
Because they want to be able to stay in touch with you.
Yeah, they're lost without being able to use email.
Mm-hmm.
So, by limiting my computer use to the library, it of course reduces my time to just an hour or two segment, and gives me a good excuse to ride my bicycle.
You have three kids now.
Mm-hmm.
How are you supporting them?
Well, here in St. Louis, we are still making soap, which we did in Herman for
mm-hmm.
6 years,
mm-hmm.
and selling it at the Soulard Farmers Market.
Mm-hmm.
We're selling about twice the volume that we did our first year, so it's going very well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also doing my rickshaw service. It's a pedal-powered taxi that seats four passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, if you go to the baseball game, you'll see me. I'm also often in Soulard on weeknights from 7 to 11, where I give free rides.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sponsored by a number of bars and restaurants there.
Do you make enough money to support a family of five?
Oh, yeah.
And save for the future?
Well, I think our savings right now isn't that great, but we do own our house outright.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, as I mentioned in the book, one of the secrets to success of living this way of life is not to have debt, not to have to pay interest. And so for a couple years after we left the Mennonite location, we worked very, very hard and saved up enough money to be able to buy a property outright.
Last question for you. Three kids.
Yeah.
Are any of them dying to have an iPod?
Well, I don't think they know what an iPod is because my oldest is only 12. But I think that my oldest loves computer games. He doesn't get to play them very often, but we have a relative who comes and visits and showers him with computer games, and he loves it.
And you allow them in the house? You don't have a problem with that?
Sure. See, a lot of these things, it's all in the dosage level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with an occasional wham, bang, whiz, computer game session.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is if you do it, hours a day, every day.
Gotcha. I appreciate you coming in here today. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
The book is called Better Off, out in publication in paperback today, Flipping the Switch on Technology by Eric Brendy. This is the Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.